Hello, we're back again with Rehab Talks. If you've listened before, you'll know who we are, but just in case you're listening for the first time, my name's Rosie and I've got Peter and Gordon joining me again today. This week, we're going to be talking about the advertising landscape and how it's changing. And we'll also be talking about how brands can stay relevant and think about how they should be targeting their consumers better.
One of the reasons this is relevant now, I guess, is because last week, for the first time, Facebook introduced ads into their Messenger app. They're not done very nicely. They're kind of a great big banner ad slap in the middle of your personal feed, which is sort of a little bit disruptive. But I guess people have to monetize these services in some way.
That's kind of like the Twitter model, where ads appear in their native apps, whether you like them or not, and interrupt the flow of your communication.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we do get these, even though big companies like Facebook, you know, they've made their money on advertising, and of course they were going to advertise at some point. But when you reach into people's sort of personal channels, where it's a list of their friends and family, it just seems way more impersonal, I suppose, and more intrusive. And I guess it's not just Facebook that we have to think about, but sort of emerging platforms as well. We've got VR, we've got AR. They're free right now for the most case, but how is this going to be funded in the future?
Yeah, with regard to VR and AR, I guess games are a good reference for that. How ads are done within game environments, mapped into 3D worlds. If we are going to go to some kind of wearable where we have layers on top of our reality, how does advertising play in that space without being that obtrusive? Here I am enjoying an experience, wham, here's something in your face that just annoys you. So there's that to consider.
Yeah, I know Area 120, who are like Google's internal incubator project, they're sort of the replacement for the 20% time. One of the first products that they've unreal, or one of the first experiments, I should say, that they unveiled lately was a new advertising unit in VR. Mm. It's basically like a little cube that you tap and brings up a full page ad. I guess I don't know how else you would fund these things without people paying for them in order to reach scale.
Yeah, I mean, there's things like virtual billboards, isn't there? If you think about games like Wipeout that have, you know, branded content as you fly around the track, or driving games, that doesn't disturb you, that doesn't annoy you. It's kind of in the environment you're comfortable in and doesn't break the experience. I guess that's the key for me, is if I'm in Messenger and suddenly there's an ad right there, I'm in Twitter reading some friend's feed, and then suddenly, blam, that's obtrusive, that's in the way. That's why ad blockers are so prevalent these days.
I think ad blockers, what's interesting is they were kind of seen as a bit of competition from the browser makers, but they're now kind of adopting them or embracing them. Famously, iOS included a kind of an ad blocking API in their last release, and they've said their next version of Safari, which will be in iOS 11, will actually have more machine learning based ad blocking in there. And Google, surprisingly, for a company that makes so much money from advertising, also have said that Safari in early 2018 will start blocking ads as well. But I think what's really interesting about that is the two different approaches they're taking. Apple, who, you know, don't make a lot of money from advertising, that's not their business model. They're actually blocking the tracking scripts. For them, it's all about privacy and security. Mm. Whereas Google, who do make a lot of money for advertising, they're kind of using a whitelist approach. So if you make what they deem to be good ads, I mean, it's not just them, they're working with the good ads authority or something, body. And so they'll be blocking ads that they think don't meet their standards, but won't be blocking the tracking scripts.
Yeah, and interesting as well with the whole ad blocking thing, that the traditional kind of broadcast advertising, interruptive advertising, is just not acceptable to a whole new generation of people. Millennials, I believe they're called. If only we had one here to ask about that, Rosie.
We actually recently, well, it was quite a while ago now, but we went and spoke at YMS, which is like a youth marketing conference. Our MD, Rob Bennett, spoke there, and it was really interesting because we did a talk about ad blockers, and we had Psycho and Google there, and we were just talking about how the landscape's changed and how people just hate ads now. Like, especially, I think a lot of millennials really hate ads and are using ad blockers. There's 615 million devices that are actually blocking ads, which is, I think you'll agree, huge.
It's a large number, isn't it?
There's a lot of people blocking ads.
But I mean, like, what proportion of 615 million is a large number in general, but what proportion is that?
11% of the global internet population.
So that's more than like 1 in 10 people globally using ad blockers somewhere. Is, you know,
that's between 10 and 12%, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's really interesting to kind of think about the consumer behaviour and like try and understand why people are blocking ads.
Why are you blocking so many ads? Why is your generation so sick of advertising?
I think ads are really intrusive and often they're just not relevant. I think they're the two main reasons why they're not working. So, you know, you're getting serviced all these ads everywhere. There's so much noise and content, but nothing is that relevant. And that's why people are ad blocking. I think that brands really need to identify their audience and find a way to connect with them that's not only just like relevant to their consumer, but also relevant to them. So it's like an authentic experience for the consumer. And I think brands that are doing it really well are brands like Adidas. You know, they know their consumers. They know where their consumers are and what they're doing. I remember when they partnered with Stormzy and they took grime culture to Tokyo. And I just thought that was so cool, and it went down so well. And then you've got Kenzo partnering with H&M and Rihanna making shoes with Puma, and their products sell out in hours, and it's because they know who they're targeting, where their consumers are playing and what their consumer wants. And I think brands should be following their lead, really. I think brands need to get a grip with where their consumers are playing. I think that's a huge thing. So whether it's Snapchat or Instagram or Facebook, it's about making content that sits perfectly and organically within that platform, so it's relevant to the consumer wherever they are at that time. We're seeing a lot of brands now on Snapchat, on Instagram and Twitter, and you know, they're still in traditional advertising, whether it's print or TV. So brands are on all the time. They are always on. So it's much easier for them to slip up if they're not being authentic. One really funny thing actually at the conference was a lady from Twitter. She said that when David Bowie died, obviously, you know, everyone was really sad and there was a lot of content as always, but that she said that she saw Crocs had made this kind of image, and it was Croc with a lightning, you know, Ziggy Stardust.
Oh yeah, I actually bought 5 pairs of Crocs that day.
It had a lightning bolt on it, and she just said, like, what the fuck has Crocs got to do with David Bowie? And like, that was just so unauthentic. And I think I can't speak for all millennials, of course, but I just think, you know, we don't have time for that. We can see straight through it. And it's that kind of advertising that it just doesn't work.
So it's like an authentic brand voice that's providing a use to people, if that's what...
I'm not
a millennial myself. I'm just out the age bracket, but...
Yeah, it's just about being authentic and believable, like, you know, knowing who your brand are and then using a language and a tone that fits for that brand, not trying to be something else just because that's what's happening in culture, or, you know, just being authentic. I'm referring to myself as a millennial, but actually we're all different. We're not like mythical creatures, you know, with the same behaviours. You can't base behaviour on age. It's just not that simple. And I think brands need to get their heads around that. So, you know, brands like Spotify, Netflix, they've got it so right because they base recommendations on previous behavioural data, not just your age or sex. So it's not like, oh, you know, she's a girl and she's 21, so let's recommend her a chick flick because maybe I like Luther or Sherlock Holmes or the Tudors. So I think, you know, it's got to be a dialogue from now on. You can't just service people with advertising, telling a story and expect it to stick. Like, you can't. It has to be a two-way dialogue. You have to let your consumers personalize and, you know, take in information as they want to, where they want to. I think that's so important.
So is that the way forward, do you think, for many brands, is kind of reaching out to people through personalization based on their behavior or based on their actions or knowing them better?
Yeah, I think definitely that ties into what we're doing here at Rehab, which is less campaign work. Obviously, agencies like ours traditionally have been built off money from campaign work, like one-shot, big, explosive things on mobile, on web or whatever, just one-way communications or even two-way with a bit of social in there. That kind of work is dying away, and people like Rosie are turned off by that kind of thing. It's not, they don't want to be broadcast to, they want something to accompany them in their lives. And that's why we talk so much about brands as a service here at Rehab. So we've got Digital Garage that helps people skill up. There's all these MOOCs and all these things that accompany people's lives, Nike with their services. Can you provide utility, even though it's not a very exciting word? Can you provide utility to people? Can you accompany them and give them something and endear your brand to them that way, rather than interrupting their experience or broadcasting to them in perhaps the wrong tone of voice. So I think that's definitely what we're kind of looking at here, and there's a trend that we're following. That sentence trailed off badly.
Say it again with more impact.
What did I say?
That's a trend that we're following.
That's a trend that we are following.
I think it's just about having a service that's helpful to you so that it's actually making your life better rather than interrupting your life or just being irrelevant.
And maybe that ties into like voice computing, Google Home and Alexa, and people providing skills and things there to give you things that you can use to accompany you, and then hopefully you're endeared to their brand and their products or whatever services they're providing.
And it goes back to before, like knowing your consumer. If you know your consumer, you know what they want or what they need and what's going to help them. So it's kind of like a journey. Right?
And if you don't know them, you get to know them and then recommend personalized things based on machine learning. Amazing.
Yeah, and it's you know, it's about being where your customers are, not making them come to you anymore. You know, as you mentioned a second ago, we used to build big campaign pages and then spend a fortune trying to get people to come to the campaign page. That no longer works, I think, in a world where people are much more on social, they're much more on messaging, they're kind of having many more group chats and private chats, but they want to sort of invite brands into that space rather than feel like brands are paying them to go somewhere else.
And does this also play a little bit into the demise of apps? Well, not the demise, but the lack. Certainly a few years ago, oh, download this Pepsi app, get it. You would be prepared to do that. Now, people are not prepared to waste their time installing like a brand app to get specific information around a campaign. It's just not how people operate now, is it?
So, no, they want it where they are, which is messaging, right? So it's like Facebook Messenger or iMessage. And I think part of the problem is that there's so many. So you don't really know anymore. It's just noise. Like for me, I'm constantly seeing kind of different apps or different things, and I just don't even know what they are anymore because there's so many. So that's why I think brands are getting into the space where people are, which is like iMessage. Like the KLM one was really amazing. I think that was the first one that was really great.
The Westworld one was exceptional as well.
Westworld one was exceptional.
Isn't that up for an Emmy?
It is up for an Emmy.
I'd like to meet the studio that made that.
It's up for an Emmy for outstanding creative achievement in interactive media within a scripted program.
Ooh. I give that title an award for most elongated and abstruse title for an award ever at an Emmy.
All right, it's far too hot in this recording studio, so we're going to end that there. Thank you very much for listening.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. See you next week.